This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Patsy with a Z. I'm coming to you from downtown Clearwater, Florida, where we are having the absolute most perfect weather. It's what our mayor likes to call his weather. And welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who likes to read and wants to know the story behind the book. Today, I have a special guest who has written a book that is for everyone who has been dreaming of writing, and his name is Alan Gelb. He's a famous writing coach and one of the most read writing coaches by teenagers, because he has written the famous Conquering the College Admission Essay. And now he's come out with a wonderful book for all baby boomers. Hi, Alan, are you there?
Hi, Patsy. How are you doing today?
Great. Oh, it's fantastic to talk to you because, you know, as a baby boomer myself, it's wonderful that you're encouraging people to write, which is what I do all the time. And your book, which is called Having the Last Say, Capturing Your Legacy in One Small Story. Tell us, where did you get the idea for doing this? And then we'll get into details on how to encourage people to write and how they can start.
All right. Well, it was kind of an aha moment for me. I was attending a funeral service as I, unfortunately, as a baby boomer myself, I'm doing more of that these days, finding myself at such situations. And while I always appreciate hearing what people have to say about the person who's no longer there, I'd like to hear the voice of the person one last time. So in that moment, I realized that what I do with, have been doing for years now with 17-year and 18-year-old students, which is essentially helping them with a life review exercise. They're asked to capture a piece of their life in 650 words for the purposes of college admissions. I could take that whole thing that I do with them and apply it to people my age and older so that they can create a piece that could, a narrative, a story of about 500 to 1,000 words that can be left as a keepsake for people in their lives or also potentially be read at their own memorial service.
Well, that, you know, it's a wonderful time for people who want to get their stories done. Of course, you're talking about a small piece, which is 1,000 words, and I think anybody can do that, and we're going to talk about how people should approach it. Most people, you know, who haven't, of course, those of us who love to write have no problem, but those people who have not had any experience in writing often think they can't do it. But with your help, I think they can. So let's talk about what's important. I know you have four main elements that help to create a narrative.
Yeah. Well, let me just pick up on what you were saying for a moment, because that's very important. This book is for, you know, the unidentified writer, a professional. I've worked with professional writers on these last days, and several of their pieces are represented in the book. Journalists and creative writers whose pieces are in the book. However, you certainly don't have to be that to do a last say, and the other pieces in the book are by lay people, shall we call them, people who do not have a recognizable history with writing. So this book, as with my other book, is really designed to get the unidentified writer into the act of writing. And the way I've been able to do that successfully is by helping people understand that the narrative, and I'm using that word interchangeably with the word story, that the narrative is a form, like a golf swing, like a dance move. It has a form. And in the first chapter of my book, I distill that the four elements of that form so that anybody can really understand what it takes to tell a good story, because we all know people in our lives who are good storytellers, who understand that form naturally, and we also unfortunately know some people who kind of ramble on.
So, you know, when people sit down and they want to start their story, what should they look for? What should they hone in on, one particular event in their life?
Yeah, well, Patsy, that's a good question, and it's a big question. What my book does is it creates a mechanism by which you can land on that moment. And let me also say that an additional hook for this exercise is that we're writing about an ethical value that we've lived by. So in addition to just picking a moment in your life, you are picking a moment that reflects how you've lived as an ethical human being. This is built on a platform that goes back to ancient times. It's called the ethical will. It goes back to Genesis. Jacob gave an ethical will to his sons in the Bible. And what an ethical will is it's a document that is designed to pass your ethical values from one generation to another. It has been adapted over the years to a number of uses. In the present time, it has a secular use. Ethical wills are used by estate planners, financial planners, and so forth. So that's the hook. And what the book does, it presents a number of exploratory questions. There's a whole list of about 30 of them. They range, you know, quite far-ranging things like, you know, when has my mind and body ever felt in perfect harmony? If I close my eyes and picture a place in the world, what is that place? What will I miss most when I'm gone? Have I ever freed myself of a compulsion? All kinds of questions like that. And you answer those questions quickly, and then, you know, you put it down for a day or two, and you go back to it, and you see which of your answers is pulling you. You know, where do you feel that magnetic pull? And this may take a few go-rounds before you identify it, and that's the one that wants to be written. And the essay also allows you to see, the exercise also allows you to see various themes emerging in your life. They may reappear from one answer to the other.
You know, when people have asked me, you know, I often get asked, you know, how should I write my story? What should I do? And I tell them that exactly what you've done here so beautifully in having this list of questions to start from and to think about it and then pick that story that is most compelling. Whether it's a story about somebody in your family, like your relationship with your grandmother, or if you had an interesting job and you had a conflict or something within your workplace that mm-hmm. brought out something in you, where perhaps you helped somebody, you did something good, or you changed a situation around, and to be proud of that and to write about it.
Absolutely, and I find it interesting with the writers that I've worked with that they're not going back to try to depict the big moments in life, you know, the weddings, the births, the graduations, things like that. They're writing about much smaller, more subtle moments that might actually get lost if they're not written about, and that would be quite a shame. You know, you mentioned the word length before, 500 to 1,000 words, and the reason I chose that length is because that's sort of a doable length for people that are not identified writers. But beyond that, it's also a doable length for people who might be asked to deliver this piece at a service, you know, who are not orators, who are not Barack Obama, you know. 5 minutes of delivering a piece is all this takes, and that's doable for most people. I could read one for you if you
would. I would love to.
Great. Yep. Great. I usually read my own, but I think today I'm going to read somebody else's, okay? So
okay.
This is a writer named Anne, and I will just jump into it, and then I'll talk for a moment about what I think happened, what the process was about for her, okay?
Okay, great.
Okay. I shape my lips into a round, awe, AW-shaped smile and inhale deeply. All around me, I hear the sound of circular breathing, feeling its warm and sustaining force. Justina, our director, nods, and we exhale the first chord of Cristobal de Morales' Alleluia. true, in sync, in tune. We're really together this afternoon. It's deep winter, and the audience that fills the small, drafty New England church is swathed in sweaters and scarves. We nine singers are also wearing close-fitting hats in solidarity with Laurel, our soprano soloist, a recent cancer survivor. We're all in various stages of middle age, busy with our lives, but not even a blizzard could keep us away from this recital. Suddenly, I can feel my chest tightening. It's almost time for the last song. I'll be starting the solo, and there won't be a music folder or a microphone to grab onto for support. No prompts, just you, as Justina likes to say. This squeezing out of air has happened before. The first time I stood in front of this group to sing about eight bars of a folk song, I felt suddenly stunned, like a cow in the slaughter line. I couldn't remember how to breathe. The first note came out as a croak, and the phrase wavered along from there. The next phrase was a little better, but there was no strength or conviction behind it. My cheeks were burning as I stepped back into the group. That was 5 years ago, and the shortness of breath was mostly due to anxiety. Now emphysema has been added to the challenge, and sometimes it feels as though I'm inhaling through mesh. It's my own fault, of course. If I allow myself to think about it, my 35 years of smoking point accusing fingers at me. Then my throat goes dry, which makes it even harder to sing. I actually stayed away from singing for many years, as much as I love it, because I was afraid to try and fail. An extremely wise musical friend finally steered me to Justina, who convinced me I could do it, and that it would actually feel good. As the cycles of my breath have gotten shorter, I've spoken to Justina about my concern that I'll become a liability to the group. Should I give it up? But Justina has said no. If I keep working on my breathing, singing will be the best thing for me, and even if I'm not consciously aware of it, she and the others will be helping. I step in front of the group with Laurel, my friend and duet partner. The piano gives us our notes, and the chorus begins humming four chords up, four chords down, then one more time. In spite of Laurel's reassuring presence and the warmth I can feel behind me, my chest starts tightening up. This time I know what to do. My feet feel for the solid floor. My shoulders relax. I don't know how many more recitals I have ahead of me, but right now that doesn't matter. Four beats before my first note, the inhale begins through awe-shaped mouth, expanding abdomen and chest, flowing down the legs, connecting with the live earth. Then the breath wants to come back out toward the tip of the nose, over the heads in front of me, toward the high stained glass window on the back wall. My voice wants to come with it and does. Lean on me when you're not strong. It's all about the breath. I can feel all nine of us taking a common inhale. Laurel and I smile at each other and everyone sings the chorus. And I'll be your friend. I'll help you carry on. Then Laurel begins the next verse an octave above, so clear and full of feeling. It's working for both of us, for today at least. We're breathing and singing. Ah.
Wow.
Sorry I had to subject you to my singing.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. And so let me just tell you a little bit about the process of her coming to this essay, okay?
Absolutely, yes.
So she's somebody that I've known for quite a while, and I have a sense of who she is as a person, who her character is. She told me she wanted to write something about breathing, and she did a draft of this piece about breathing and being in the choir and so forth. But I knew that she had been a smoker and that she wasn't addressing that. So she, in her second draft, she brought into the story the conflict. And that's one of the four elements that I talk about, the conflict. Everything that we read and enjoy in literature has to do with conflict and seeing how human beings resolve it, whether it's Hamlet or The Sopranos or Forrest Gump or whatever you're talking about. So she entered her conflict entered into the story, which was that she had a history of smoking. She had done something to herself that she deeply regretted and felt guilty about. But where she went to in the story is a feeling of forgiving herself for her past mistakes, because she's essentially a life-affirming person, and connecting with the group around her. And that's the point, the second of the four elements that you must have in a story. Why did you tell this story? If you don't know the answer to that question, and many people don't when they've written a piece of writing, the reader won't know why you wrote the story. So her point was this life-affirming thing, forgiving herself. And it became a very powerful story. I bet you're dying to know what the other two elements are now.
Yes.
Okay. So the other two elements, so I mentioned the point, I mentioned conflict and tension. The other two parts are once upon a time, once I call it, where do you pick up a story? So, you know, first draft, she started, you know, it was a gray day, the weather was cold, you know, that kind of stuff that people often start stories with. And I said, well, you don't really need that, or you can refer to it further down in the essay. Start further down the story. So there she is opening up the story with actually singing. And that's an important thing to come to terms with, because when you only have 650 words, you have to make the most of every word you have in there. And structure is all important. And the fourth element of the narrative, which you must deal with, is what I call the ordinary versus the extraordinary. Something must happen in a story that's out of the ordinary. So if she was just singing, it's not a story. If she's singing with the difficulty of breathing, then it becomes a story. That's the exceptional thing, and it also relates to the conflict. So those are the elements.
Well, it was an amazing story by the end.
It was, yes.
How many drafts did it go through?
They all are in this book, and the thing that I'm really in awe of, and I've worked with hundreds, many, many hundreds of students, 17-year-olds, and not as many adult writers yet because the book just came out. But, you know, I'm amazed at the ability of the average person, the typical person, to produce a piece of writing that's really terrific when they understand that form.
Oh, and it certainly has a wow factor, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how many drafts she had to go through to get to that point, but it is great.
It wasn't overwhelming. She maybe did three drafts, something like that. And, you know, think about what it would be like to be sitting in a funeral service when she's gone and hearing that, you know? That would be, I think, so powerful.
Well, absolutely. And I think that, you know, you're going to, once this book, now that the book has come out and people are going to be putting these together, I have a feeling the next thing you're going to be doing is people are going to want you to put them all together in a book and have a collection of these, because this one is something that everybody should read. It's not just for her family or, you know, her friends. It has elements that are universal to it.
Yes, absolutely.
So I have to take a short commercial break, but I want you to hold on, because when I come back, I want to talk about point of view and how people should think about that when they're writing.
I'll be right here.
Okay.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, I'm John Rakowski with Charles Ruttenberg Realty. Don't you love living here in the Tampa Bay area? Oh, I'm sorry, you don't live here yet? Well, if you already are or thinking about it, call me at my office at 727-538-9200 extension 2 for any real estate needs, including a free market analysis of your home. Your home is worth more than you can imagine. Call me today at 727-538-9200 extension 2. I'm John Rakowski.
Are you looking for the perfect gift? Going to a wedding? A special birthday? The Silver Queen is the place to go. Don't settle for the ordinary. At the Silver Queen, you will find a unique gift. Things that you won't find at the mall. From beautiful photo frames to silver and china. Guys, looking for that perfect ring? You'll find it at the Silver Queen. And don't forget their bridal registry. Located at 1350 West Bay Drive in Largo. Visit their website, silverqueen.com. They have some wonderful coupons. And when you go to the store, tell them that Patsy with a Z sent you.
Are you looking for some great restaurants? For some great wines? Where are the great chefs? Listen to Dine Out Radio Herd every Wednesday on the Tantalk Radio Network. 12 to 1 p.m., we'll tell you where all the great events are. We'll have Food and Wine Magazine and Bon Appetit Magazine. We'll have their editors and writers on each month. And maybe we'll throw in a couple surprises. Check out the website, diningoutradio.com.
My bridge is all... At the Oaks of Clearwater, you'll enjoy a lifestyle to fit your needs. From independent living, assisted living, memory care, and skilled nursing. Our exciting independent lifestyle is the perfect combination of freedom, comfort, and security. Enjoy total independence with peace of mind. Our independent lifestyle includes chef-prepared meals in our beautiful waterfront dining room, a continental breakfast, all utilities, including cable and telephone, housekeeping with linen service, scheduled transportation, including trips for shopping, local restaurants, theater, and more. Our activities program is second to none. At the Oaks of Clearwater, you'll enjoy affordable luxury waterfront senior living with a million-dollar view. Call today, 727-445-4069, and discover where caring, compassionate service really makes the difference.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I'm back with my guest, Alan Gelb, whose book, Having the Last Say, is now available on Amazon. Hi, Alan.
Hi, Patsy. Available on Amazon and all sorts of other places.
And all sorts of other places, absolutely. Although most people are buying everything on Amazon, it seems to me.
But I'm guilty of that as well.
I know. But there are, of course, at your favorite bookstores, and are you doing a tour? Promote the book?
I'm doing a regional tour. I live in the New York area, not traveling beyond that at the moment.
Okay.
But
well,
those who are interested can visit my website, havingthelastday.com, and where you can also see more about the book and read some of these essays, which are on the site.
That's great. Havingthelastsay.com, right?
Correct, yes.
Okay, great. Well, you know, I think so many people have thought about writing, and then they put it off, and they put it off, and they put it off. And now we have over 70 million baby boomers?
That's a good audience.
Something like that. And, you know, it's time, if you're out there and you've been thinking about it, it's time to get Alan's book and get started, because he has so many great suggestions. And as he's written here, you can start with 750 to 1,000 words, which really...
500 to 1,000.
500. Oh,
yeah,
wow.
Even easier.
Even easier. 500. Wow. And so it's a beginning. And, of course, I have a feeling, though, that you're going to be very inspirational to people here, that once they are inspired by you to continue writing, because if as you read the previous essay, it was so beautiful. I hope this woman writes more, because she's, you know, once you start, it's funny, when people start writing at first, you know, this is partly the educational result of our education. Most people don't write during their lifetime. They get out of school, and that's sort of the end of their writing, unless, you know, they're a business person who has to write a letter or a report. Most people don't do any writing.
It's true, unfortunately. And, you know, one of the things I always tell people when we get started is that, you know what, it's there's fear involved with writing. You know, there's always fear involved with writing, even for professional writers. Every time I sit down and have to write a new article, I find myself, you know, I'm vacuuming, or I'm playing some word game online or something like that. You have to get into the flow of it. And why are you afraid? Because there's the risk of failure, a big risk of failure, you know. But, you know, if you're failing at a 500 to a 1,000-word essay, you can always start over, and you haven't invested a huge amount of time in that. I've failed with novels, you know. I've written a novel that didn't work, you know, and that really hurts. But this is something that you can afford to fail at and try again, something else, you know.
And the important thing is for people to realize that, well, when you, let's say you write your 500 words, and then you go back a few days later, you say, oh, well, that's not right. And that doesn't exactly you know, show what I was thinking, you can rewrite it.
Absolutely. You know? And you need to rewrite it. I mean, that's a given that you're going to be doing a lot of rewriting as part of the writing process.
And all the professional writers I know rewrite, and most of the famous... You know,
that's the part I love, you know. I mean, the more you write, the more you love the rewriting, because that's the molding and the crafting and all that stuff. So that's really fun.
Tell us about Hemingway. He rewrote something.
Well, Hemingway, you know, he lost a whole novel in a taxi cab once. So, that really hurt. And he was writing, you know, all the time. But, you know, the thing about this is that you... it's also doable because it's you understand what you're doing. You know, the book lays out the writing process, not just the form of the narrative, but also what goes on when you write a piece. So what happens in a first draft, which is usually largely structural in nature, you're working in structure. What happens in the second draft? What happens in the third draft? So people get a sense of what the whole arc of a piece of writing is like. And that's helpful.
Now, one of the decisions, of course, that people have to make when they're writing is the point of view. And most commonly, of course, for people who are writing about themselves, they use the first person. But they don't necessarily have to.
No, they don't. There are several issues involved in point of view. One is it going to be first person? Is it going to be second person?
Perhaps you should explain what they are. So for people who don't know what point of view is, what's the first person point of view?
And there's a whole chapter on point of view in my book. So point of view, a first person point of view is, you know, I did this, I did that. You know, you're telling it from your point of view, the writer's point of view. You know, if you look at young adult novels, for instance, you'll see that 90% of them are written that way. And that's great. You know, Catcher in the Rye is written that way. If you're writing a very personal piece, as this is, it is highly likely that you will be writing in the first person. You will also have the option of writing in the third person if you want to tell it in a more detached way, perhaps, in which, you know, he did that, he did this, or you can even combine first and third person. I have a piece in the book which starts out in the third person point of view and then shifts to the first person point of view. So there's a kind of almost an analytical feeling about doing that, you know. That's interesting. Second person is you did this, you did that. That's almost never encountered, so don't worry about that.
Except if you're a mother and you're writing to your
exactly.
children. You did this.
But there are also other issues of point of view, like tense. Are you going to tell the story in the past tense, in the present tense, or the future tense? Well, unlikely you're going to tell it in the future tense, which, you know, you will do this, you will do that. Highly unlikely. But you can definitely play with either a present tense or a past tense feeling. And both, that really has to do with the piece that you're working on. And then you can also shift. So if I'm writing, for instance, about, falling off a raft on a whitewater expedition, let's say, I might decide to write that, most of that, in the present tense, as if it's real time. And then at the end, I might say that happened, you know, 10 years ago or something, whatever, something like that.
Well, I like the examples in your book, and particularly, you know, how you show a writing, sort of a very basic writing, and then steps as it's developed and as it changes over a period of time. And this is, I think, is very helpful to people who have not written before. To see the process of how things are improved and changed by, you know, really simple devices in a way to make it a more complete story.
Yeah, what you're referring to is that there are at least one essay in the book I kind of take the reader through the steps. So I show what it looked like in the first draft, then I show what the edits look like in the second draft and the third draft, and that's quite interesting. I do that in my college admissions book as well, because most people obviously are not familiar with editing at all, you know, And I tell all the writers that I work with, young and old, that I'm working as an editor with you, not necessarily a teacher, although you could probably learn a lot, but as an editor, meaning that we focus on the product and everything gets looked at by an editor, every comma, because a misplaced comma will hold up the reader. If you hold up the reader, then you've lost the reader for a moment. You have to get that reader back. That's, making it difficult.
Well, again, part of this, the problem I think that people feel in writing and sort of their fear is because coming out of high school, there's sort of a limited creative writing opportunity in school. And so you come out without really a very strong background in grammar and, of course, nowadays we're lucky if they can spell because everybody's using these devices where everything is LOL and BFFs. Yeah. So
there's a lot of easy tips for ameliorating those problems, you know, and some of these are in the books, you know, leading with a noun and a verb, you know, I did this, I did that, even though it may sound simple to the ear, but I always tell readers that, I always tell the writers that readers will never hold simple language against you. They will hold thorny, tangled syntax against you. But they don't mind reading simple writing. Going back to Hemingway, he did pretty well with it.
Exactly. It's so funny. On this program, I get so many writers, and I'm always talking to them, and so many go back to Hemingway. That's like a common statement that we go back and we look at Hemingway and his writing sometimes was very short sentences, very, you know, compact, but it says so much. And and so that's the beauty of it. You don't have to said he said gallantly or he said enthusiastically, you know.
Right. And the book is full of just very simple tips that make a huge difference. For instance, a lot of people feel like a lot of people who aren't not experienced writers feel like they can make their writing better by using a lot of adjectives and adverbs, you know. So everything is, you know, he walked swiftly or he jumped rapidly or something like that, you know. And that really brings down the level of the writing. You always want to replace an adverbial phrase with a strong verb. So instead of, you know, I'm trying to think of an example. So, you know, instead of saying like, you know, he walked quietly, you could say something like he lurked, you know. A strong active verb is always so much better than an adverbial phrase.
Well, that's in your book, you have all of these sort of little tips and little ideas that really are very, very helpful to people who are just starting out. And I, you know, although you're saying, you know, to write 1,000 words, as I said, you know, it's a wonderful thing nowadays with the ability to self-publish that people can put these together. And as a matter of fact, as a family, I can see very much that a family might want to have each member of the family write their own little narrative, 1,000 words, and put it together as a book, as a family book.
That would be splendid.
Something to treasure. So you ask, you know, Aunt Martha to write hers, and Uncle Jim to write his, and Grandpa to write his, and everybody in the family through whatever age, and put these together.
Let me pick up on that for a second because that's interesting. So the big difference between what I do with 17-year-olds and what I do with this older population is that the work with the older population has had and can have a real social model built into it. When I work with the 17-year-olds, it's just one-on-one. However, I don't know about you, Patsy, but you know, when I gather together with friends, we start talking about our operations or our knee replacements or whatever, you know, some of us say, you know, oh, aging, we really should talk about this. We should form a group the way there were women consciousness raising groups and stuff. Seems like such a good idea because baby boomers are a highly proactive generation. However, it doesn't happen. It sort of gets lost in the shuffle of life. This last day business is a mechanism by which people can do some of that work. So with these adult writers, I form groups. We come together at the beginning of the process, and we lay it out as a group. We disperse and do our work individually. When the pieces are finished, we convene as a group, and we share the pieces. And then you get the added benefit of hearing other people's insights into life and how they're going to deal with making sense of it in life's third act, you know?
Well, the more I think about it, the more I like the idea of using this book. And I know it's an ideal book for book clubs to use. Mm-hmm. And for, say, for example, a Hadassah group,
right,
to get together and each of them write their own, you know, essay. And then put it together as a book, and yep, and sell it to the in your synagogue or, if you know, in church groups where
interesting than a cookbook, right?
Exactly. I mean, we have enough of those. So, but I think it's a brilliant little the idea is brilliant to have people write their essays, and I think to put it together even opens up more possibilities, whether they put it together as a family book, as a book, yep, for their club, a book for their church.
And, you know, I was very moved, actually, because the writers that I worked with in order to create this book were essentially my guinea pigs, you know? I mean, I went to them and I said, what do you think about the idea of doing this? And I was a little nervous because I thought, you know, it might be received as being a bit macabre or whatever. People were very open to it. And then they were very open to sharing their pieces with the world, with their real names, because some of these pieces are very, very personal, you know, as the one I read, you know. And I think people feel, a great sense of ownership and pride around these pieces. I've had people tell me that they've read these pieces to their family at the Thanksgiving table, you know, and it really was a powerful family moment.
Well, it is a legacy that you yeah, want people to remember you by, and I think it's I think it's a great idea, and I think that you're going to have a big audience among baby boomers who are going to grasp onto this idea, and I hope that people will promote it, particularly as I said in book clubs where we have, you know, there are so many book clubs all around America where people get together to talk about books, and they all most always have people who they love reading, and they hadn't thought about writing anything for themselves. And this is a perfect book for people to use.
Coincidentally, I have my book club tonight, which has been going on for about 25 years. So we've kind of gotten older together, and we are reading Atul Gawande's Being Mortal. I don't know if you know it or not. It's an amazing book about life's third act. And that's the kind of work that people are doing. I mean, the baby boomers are starting things like death cafes, death over dinner. These are informal groups in which people come together, sometimes strangers, to talk about their feelings about end of life. This is I haven't been to one yet, but this is this kind of work is going on now among our generation, which really feels like we want to take a different approach to aging.
Well, I suppose it's I don't know, among all of the people I know, it's more what can they still accomplish? You know, there's so much. It's so fantastic how people can do so much today that, 40 years ago when people were over 60, they didn't do anything. And today, anything can be done. And it's amazing. And when you see, like, President Bush, who jumped out of an airplane,
absolutely,
at, 92 or something like that,
yeah,
you know, people can do anything. Now, yes. I have to take another little commercial break, but do you have time to stay on? Because I'd like to talk to you for a minute about conquering the college admission essay.
I'd be happy to do that.
Okay, because seniors are going back to school, and I want to give them some ideas.
Sure.
Okay, we'll be right back.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you looking for the perfect gift? Going to a wedding? A special birthday? The Silver Queen is the place to go. Don't settle for the ordinary. At the Silver Queen, you will find a unique gift. Things that you won't find at the mall. From beautiful photo frames to silver and china. Guys, looking for that perfect ring? You'll find it at the Silver Queen. And don't forget their bridal registry. Located at 1350 West Bay Drive in Largo. Visit their website, silverqueen.com. They have some wonderful coupons. And when you go to the store, tell them that Patsy with a Z sent you.
Hi, it's Sawyer from the Dolphin Tale movies. Now is the perfect time to visit the world-famous Clearwater Marine Aquarium. Millions have seen us around the world, and now you can experience what we do in person. Come and reconnect with Winter and her fun-loving movie co-stars, Hope, Mavis, and yes, that crazy bird, Rufus. Immerse yourself into the world of marine life rescue with the behind-the-scenes tour. Explore the film sets, and don't miss our free boating adventure. Save time in line when you buy tickets at seawinter.com. Kids only $16.95.
Charles Ruttenberg Realty proudly sponsors Joy on Paper with Patsy Gill. Charles Ruttenberg sets the standard of excellence with residential and commercial real estate transactions and can help you on your next transaction, whether that is for a second home, investment, or downsizing. Call us today at 727-538-9200 extension 2 and allow me to help you. I'm John Rakowski, the broker at Charles Ruttenberg Realty.
Some people don't believe in mermaids. Hope that's not you, because they exist at Wickiwatchee Springs State Park off US 19 and State Road 50, just north of Spring Hill. Since 1947, the magic of the mermaids have been entertaining visitors at the 538-acre Springs Park. Come and watch in the 400-seat submerged theater, The Little Mermaid Show at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. daily. Wickiwatchee State Park offers mermaid shows, reptile shows, boat tours, and swimming in the pristine spring at Buccaneer Bay. Wickiwatchee State Park is a perfect backdrop for wedding receptions, birthday parties, picnics, meetings, retreats, family reunions, or just to relax on the white sandy beach. Step back in time when things were much simpler and enjoyable. Spend the day at an original theme park. Call 352-592-5656 or log on to wickiwatchee.com for upcoming events, hours, and ticket pricing. Wickiwatchee Springs State Park, where mermaids do exist.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I'm back with my guest, Alan Gelb, who's the author of Having the Last Say, Capturing Your Legacy in One Small Story. This is an ideal book for all baby boomers who want to write their legacy document so they have something for their families and friends to remember them by, but also something that can be used as a sort of stepping stone, perhaps to write their own life story, the full book if they want. Because you learn so much from Alan's book. It is really, Alan, I think it's one of the best and sort of guides to writing that I've seen. But, of course, you're an expert at that.
Thank you so much, Patsy.
Well, because why are you an expert? Your claim, well, one of your claim to fame is that you are the author of a book that I don't know how many hundreds of thousands, millions of college students or kids who are on their way to college have read. It's called Conquering the College Admissions Essay in 10 Steps. And, of course, the ideas that you use in Having the Last Stay were, I think some of them were essentially developed from your suggestions to students on how to write an essay.
That's true.
And, you know, I know the New York Times has called your guide the best there is to how to write an essay. college students are, well, high school students are going back, and particularly for seniors who are going back to school in September. This is the time that they should start thinking about this essay. They can't wait until next, you know, April, right?
No, college applications are due by December,
yeah.
So they definitely, if they want to go to college, if they want to stay with their parents next year and
exactly.
hang around the house, they can wait till April. But during the summer, well, the summer is sort of, you know, the fans of time are rushing out on the summer, but that's a really nice time to write this essay because then, you know, school starts and there's a madness of that. And I tell you, Patsy, I always say when I work with a student, I'm so happy I'm not a high school senior anymore because they are so, they have such full plates, these kids. It's really incredible. But so many of them are incredible. That's what's very exciting about working with them. I just, you know, I'm amazed at their energy and their skills and their enthusiasm.
Well, what do you think, you know, there was a time where it was the essay wasn't that important and SAT scores meant everything, but a lot of schools are now stopping their dependency on SAT scores. I think the essay plays a very important role in admission counselors getting to know an applicant.
Yeah, I can explain that a little bit. SAT scores are still very important. There's been a study that's been released that shows that the college application essay is the fourth most important factor in gaining acceptance to a school. Ahead of things like extracurricular activities, ahead of teacher recommendations, the first three factors are your grade and class rank, your standardized test scores, and the third one is the breadth of the curriculum that you've taken on, how many AP courses you've taken, and so forth. The fourth is the essay. Now, why is that? Well, because if you imagine that you're applying, let's say, to highly selective schools, practically everybody around you who's also applying has the same kind of great ammunition that you do, you know? And I can't tell you how many of these students are beyond belief in terms of their accomplishments. The only place where your individualism can come through is in the essay. And also, most schools today have they don't interview on campus the way they used to. When I was applying to college 40 some years ago, you had to go to campus for an interview, and you put on your shirt and tie, and you were worried because you were going to be judged on the basis of that. That doesn't happen anymore. The on-campus interview is mostly an informational interview that's for your benefit. It could be with an upperclassman or a graduate student, for you to find out about the school. So the essay has become kind of like the interview used to be, the way for that committee to get to know something about you and something about your internal life. That's the whole point. Okay, everything else out there that's external can be reflected in your admission, in your other parts of your admission packet. If you write supplemental essays about your favorite extracurricular activity or whatever, those things can come through. But this personal statement essay, the 650-word for the common application, has to be deeply personal and internal.
And that's exactly the word you use is personal, because so many people think that you can fudge it or you can just get somebody else to do it for you. But in the end, it has to be your words and your feelings.
Yeah, absolutely. When I work with students, I mean, the first thing I tell them is that you have complete ownership over this essay. I will not write for students. Sometimes, you know, if I edit something, I have to put in placeholder language. But, you know, listen, I'm a 65-year-old guy. They're a 17-year-old, let's say, girl. You know, I'm not going to sound like them. They're not going to sound like me, and that's foolish. And then there's the ethical issue. You know, you don't want to start this part of your life with something that doesn't feel ethically right, and having somebody write something for you doesn't feel ethically right, and it doesn't work, because if you go to an essay writing service, basically, you know, your essay is going to be written by maybe a current college student or a graduate student. It's going to be off of a menu that they're going to suggest to you, and that's very different than the way I work with students, which is really an organic process that comes out of the student.
And it is important that you not try to pull a stunt in college essays, because nowadays you get caught. I mean, it's simple as that. They have too many search algorithms that you can't really get away with it. And why would you want to? Because if you have a desire to go to college and you want to have a good education, the key is to start off right, exactly as you said, and with your whole heart.
That, you know, my book on the college essay really enables a student to do this work on his own or her own. And I've had many, many students write to me and teachers write to me telling me that it does, in fact, do that. So even though there's definitely a benefit to be had from working directly with me, which is possible for a number of students every year, I don't want people to have the impression that they can't do it on their own, because they can.
And how many words is a college essay nowadays?
It's a maximum of 650, which is usually what students write.
Uh-huh. And so then...
And it's written to one of five prompts. You're given one of five prompts, but some of the prompts are sort of open-ended enough that you can almost write about anything and make it work.
And quickly before, you know, I'm almost running out of time, quickly before I run out of time, I had wanted to ask you about a book you wrote about Doris Day.
How did you discover that?
I discover everything.
That was, I think, the first thing I ever wrote, and I needed to get some money over a summer, and she had just published, or she was about to publish, her autobiography, if you remember, that she wrote with A. Hotchner.
Uh-huh.
That was a very big bestseller, and so I had this publisher, Grossen and Dunlap, who wanted to sort of piggyback on that and asked me to write this book, which was about her movies, and it was sort of fun. I got to interview some people like the writing team that wrote Que Sera, Sera. I got to talk to them, and it was sort of a fun month's work.
And there we have it, Que Sera.
When I was just a little girl, I asked my mother, what will I be?
Okay. I just couldn't resist.
I was not planning to fade out on that, I can assure you.
I couldn't resist it. Any excuse to play Doris Day.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
I love her voice, and there is no voice like it.
92 or something, good for her.
Okay, absolutely. Well, it's been so great to talk to you, Alan. And as I said, I think it's a wonderful book, and I encourage everyone to get it. Even if you're not a baby boomer and you're younger than that, it's still the time to start thinking about writing and having and capturing your legacy in one small story. And you can do that by getting Alan's book on Amazon and at his website.
HavingTheLastSay.com.
HavingTheLastSay.com. So thanks, Alan.
Thanks so much, Patsy, for your interest. Take care.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye now. Hi, this is Patsy with a Z. Bye-bye. Have a nice week.